right, good evening, everyone. I'm going to call the meeting to order and take roll call. Commissioner Herr, Commissioner Ward, and Commissioners Studley and Hansen are absent and excused this evening. So moving to item number 2 on the agenda, public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission.
Yes, thank you very much. I brought a stopwatch. I have my cover load. If you pass that out to the commissioner while I'm parking, I'll be there. This is the same letter that you've seen before. It's a copy of my letter to the supervisors of March 30th. And attached is a transmittal from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force regarding the complaint I want to address now, which is Sue Coffin versus the Library Commission. As you know, this comes as a culmination of a long campaign by the library against open government and Sunshine. And of course, the underlying reality is that the library is becoming more and more what they call a public-private partnership, which is not, that's a euphemism, what it's really becoming is a private income stream for corporate and philanthropic interests who turn the library into an income stream for those private interests. And of course, part of it peddling that influence is that they treat the donors well. Well, the flip side of that, of course, is that they have to treat the public worse, or what's the payoff for the benefit that the donors receive. As I say, this has been going on for a long time, and as you probably know, the Library Commission is the most notorious Sunshine violator in the city. Actually, there are two things at stake. First of all, the members of the public, how they feel when they find out that their interests and their testimony, their perception and experience of the truth means nothing compared to the lies and the lies that serve those special interests. Because of those special interests, of course, have to maintain this wall of secrecy to protect the fact that they are ripping off the library out of millions of dollars. And the other factor, of course, is the distortion of public policy that takes place when certain individuals, not just individuals, but certain perspectives on the reality are legitimized, and those who are not in on the ripoff are delegitimized. And of course, it's that mechanism by which they disenfranchise people that are not their donors in order to enfranchise the people who are their donors. That is the essence of democracy and Sunshine and everything else we recognize as the aspects of an open society. I wish I'd had my stopwatch. It's a little bit disturbing not to have a clock that you can see. Anyway, that's the essence of it. I had a couple other things, but thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Mark Solomon. The executive director was quoted in the Chronicle last month as blaming plaintiff Alan Grossman for costing the city $25,000 in attorney fees when the city attorney settled the case on the Sunshine Task Force records. It is never not okay for a citizen to seek redress in court against the executive for not implementing the law. That should never come out of this commission. Towards that, I'd like to issue a Sunshine request right here and right now to this commission for enforcement records for the Carolyn Nee Ace case from Public Power from 2002, and for the Tony Hall 2007 enforcement 2004 election. I'd like to review those documents at the commission. I'd like you to invoke all exceptions narrowly, not conservatively, but narrowly, and all laws for public records broadly. It's time to go ahead and see that too, and if we don't get any satisfaction from a Sunshine request, I know a lot of attorneys that want 25 grand will go there as well. The chair of this commission is Ms. Studley. She is executive director of Public Advocates. Public Advocates just was involved in a lawsuit in the East Bay in Pleasanton, an affordable housing lawsuit with Urban Habitat. The nature of this lawsuit, I could not imagine a more developer-friendly lawsuit to come forward. There's been a lot of involvement of developers in lawsuits in this very area and in so-called green transit-oriented development work. Some of those developers have been supporters of the appointing authority of Ms. Studley, city attorney. This commission oversees a lot of contributors who are possibly involved in that kind of a case. I think in the abundance of caution, this commission needs to ask Ms. Studley to disclose the funding sources for that lawsuit. Urban Habitat and Public Advocates didn't get this money from nowhere, and it's a landmark lawsuit. There are many ways. I mean, this city right here does not meet its affordable housing targets by law. Why wasn't this city sued? I mean, there's a lot of questions here. It's got to be answered. Last year, about this time, an employee of the city, Olivia Scanlon, stood here and had to invoke the Fifth Amendment to avoid incriminating herself. Has this commission taken any steps over the past year to follow up with the district attorney to see why a woman who is currently employed by this city, working in this very building for a supervisor, was able to claim the Fifth to avoid testifying against herself, yet has not been called to the bar of justice on possibly perjuring herself before this commission? And the closed session on the matter involving the public financing case, my understanding is Los Angeles Ethics Commission is having that discussion in public. I think with Citizens United, with this kind of attack on campaign finance, it is incumbent upon this commission to, you know, try to get the broadest, the broadest audience possible that we can to actually hear the discussion as to why public financing is under attack. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any further public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda?
Yes, good afternoon. Peter Warfield. I'm Executive Director of Library Users Association. Recently, the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force forwarded to you a finding of a violation of the Sunshine Ordinance with respect to the Library Commission president. And I hope that this will soon be on your agenda, or in any case, that your body will follow up promptly with respect to that. The library has had quite a number of violations before the Sunshine Ordinance taken there, and a majority of the complaints have been upheld by the Sunshine Task Force. The specific matter that you'll get, or that you have been, that you have received, it would be something to be hoped for that you would take the strongest possible action that you can and as promptly as you can as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further comment from anyone on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda? Okay, then we'll turn to item 3 on the agenda, the consideration of proposed regulations to exclude from the restricted source gift rule a couple of different items, and who's going to introduce this?
The staff has prepared a memo that sets forth the proposed two changes to Ethics Commission Regulation 3.216B5. The first change is to clarify how we should treat gift certificates and gift cards. Staff proposes that gift cards that can be used anywhere are basically treated like cash, but gift cards that can be used only at a specific vendor not be deemed cash. That basically is the first recommendation, and that is set forth in decision point number 1.
All right, let's pause and see if any of the commissioners have any questions about that. Decision point number 1? No? Motion?
Oh, you mean about this item?
Yes, and decision point 1, specifically the gift card issue.
So I did.
Okay, so.
So I would first say that I believe that these restrictions ought to be strict, as strict as they can be, including $25 gift cards. But even having said that, I don't think that this really addresses the issue, because all it does is restrict the number of cards from the source, and not the number of gift cards that an employee or an officer can receive from multiple sources. So there doesn't seem to be any limit based on, I mean, all the attention is given to the provider of the cards, not to the employee collecting the cards. So you could have an employee
up to a value of $420. State law limits the amount, the value of gifts you can receive in a single year from a single source at $420. So, literally speaking, you can get 16 and 4/5 $25 gift cards.
And if I may add to that, if you are a person who needs to report, file form 700, you need to report anything that you receive $50 or more from any single source that you must report. So you would have to report it.
But does that answer Commissioner Ward's question? If you get from several different sources, it's only if they add up to 50 or more, correct? That would have to go on the form 700?
Yeah, any individual source that gives you $50 or more worth of gifts, you have to report it. So anything more than 50. So if you had 10 cups of $5 coffee, you need to report that. The $10 of $5 coffee, generally speaking, is not restricted under the restricted source gift rule because that only applies to gifts of, you can't have gifts of more than $25 up to four times a year. So, I mean, this is, on the one hand, yes, you are correct. It does not restrict the amount of gifts that you can give except to the extent that it cannot exceed $420 in a calendar year.
From a single source.
From a single source.
But you are right. You get unlimited cards from multiple sources.
And this regulation is just to clarify how gift cards should be treated.
Yes,
that's
gift cards
okay.
from restricted sources. And the rule is you cannot receive a gift from a restricted source. That is the general rule. There is an exception that you can receive up to four times a year a gift other than cash that's worth $25 or less. So that is the exception. And what this does is clarify that exception to say that if it is a gift card to, say, a specific vendor, it's not deemed cash. So in other words, you could receive it. But again, if it's more than $50, you have to report it.
You're still talking about from a single source. You're not talking
yes.
about from multiple sources.
Right. That's
not
correct.
Addressing the issue of how much an employee can receive.
That is true. But there's also, the state law also does not address that. There's no
What we had to decide
fraud.
Was, is a gift card cash or is it a gift? And we sort of went around and around on this and thought, well, if you can use it just like cash anywhere you want, then it's the equivalent of cash.
Right.
So is a Starbucks gift card the equivalent of cash because you can only use it at Starbucks and you can't get cash with it? That's where we
draw the line. I get all of that.
Okay. But if you want a stricter rule, then you can. The commissioners can say, no, we think a gift card for a specific source is
But it sounds like
cash
you want the staff to look at more broadly at these rules, which is fine. That
right.
can be an agenda item. It's just not before us now.
Correct.
And we should take note of that then. So, okay, and then Commissioner Ward, as to this particular clarification, do you have an issue as to whether how gift cards should be treated in terms of how the staff broke it down? Do you agree with their recommendation or not?
That they should be treated as
that if you can use them anywhere, they're cash, and if you can only use them at one spot, then they're
and
non-cash.
That's the narrow question that we're.
That's all we're looking at.
So, but then it moves the gift card for a specific vendor into an exception area. If you redesignate it.
Well, no, right now it's not clear where it is. It just so yes, in a sense, makes it clear it's an exception. Someone could have argued it was an exception because it's not clear.
Right.
You could say. I think it's cash and move it that way. But it's just to clarify so people know what the rule is.
So it sounds like we can either adopt it and make a clear delineation, not adopt it and have no delineation, or say that it is a gift card even to the vendor.
Mm-hmm.
And since I don't use gift cards and don't have teenage kids, when you use a gift card at Starbucks, do you only get a gift card back? You don't get cash
Correct.
Back if you don't use it.
It's
generally,
the same
that's
card.
A, yes.
It's
you just
got.
Get, okay.
Yeah. It's got like a little magnetic thing on it. And you,
but you still have the value. They're giving you the change of distribution.
Okay.
And so I would say because I, you know, am not in favor of the possibility of an employee receiving gift cards from multiple sources, even up to the 400, I wouldn't vote in favor of this.
Okay. So that just means we don't have three votes to pass this rule, and which we need.
Maybe you want to bring it back to the other two are here.
Or not. I mean, we can think about it. It's whether or not
address the issue that
we can bring it back with a more comprehensive set of choices.
Yeah, that may be. Yeah. That's probably preferable. Okay, because then that takes us to decision point number two.
And decision point number two deals with, generally speaking, the combined charities. Each year, city employees and officers are invited to participate in the annual fundraising drive, which last year raised about $1.5 million for combined charities in the Bay Area. What happened generally last year was the issuance of an advice letter by the FPPC that basically said that if an employee wins a prize in a raffle that was provided by, say, Starbucks, it is really a gift to the employee from Starbucks and not a gift to the employee by the agency. If it's something from the agency, it's not deemed a gift and therefore it's not subject to the gift rules. Because of that, it has triggered basically two issues. One is this restricted source rule, which will really, if it's a restricted source, then a vendor who is a restricted source with the department would not be able to give, would continue to be able to donate, but any employee of that department would not be able to win a prize. That's part of the raffle. And the people who run the combined charities is very concerned that that would have a very detrimental effect on participation in the combined charities. The other issue related to this is that some of the prizes may have value greater than $420, and that's really an issue that the state has to look at and not something for us to look at. But what we wanted to look at was addressing it so that the restricted source rule would not apply to gifts that are solicited or given as prizes in combined charities. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is it clear to you that the FPPC is correct that this is a gift? I mean, it just strikes me as bizarre reasoning.
Well,
and if you win a raffle, it's a gift from the person who donated the prize with whom you have no contact whatsoever. And
if I were working for that agency, would I have written the opinion the same way? I do think the result is strange, and it has these weird effects, not just on combined charities, but just on other morale-boosting raffles that different agencies might have among their employees. Our conflict of interest laws incorporate the definition of gift in the Political Reform Act, and the FPPC, by regulation, has defined a number of exceptions to that rule, and in its opinion, just kind of set out how the rule applies in this circumstance, in a very closely analogous situation to what we have here. So that's what motivated us to come to the commission, because although the FPPC defines the term gift, it doesn't define the exceptions to our local restricted source rule.
All right, let's see if there's questions from Commissioner Ferrer.
So I actually think that this is fine, except what if the procedure for soliciting and selecting winners changes? So it's not as, on the selection, it's not as random as it currently is. What if it changes in some way that is?
Don't worry, that's a concern I had as well. As it's written, it refers to a reward or benefit. I think it would be better if it referred to the results of a random drawing to indicate that this clearly is random and that you don't improve your chances of winning other than buying more raffles. I think this is a laudable goal. My other concern, other than the one expressed by Commissioner Ford, is on the soliciting side.
Yeah.
Soliciting a gift could lead to the same sort of problems that we're worried about. So I would say receiving a gift is fine. I would exclude the soliciting.
Yeah, that struck me. I had the same reaction to it. The soliciting really seems like it could walk somebody into trouble trying to get someone with whom they're working to donate something large. And it receiving in a random drawing, that I think is that there should be an exception.
You know, what's kind of one interesting, I guess, wrinkle in the current law is that actually soliciting a gift to the city or a donation to a nonprofit from a contractor who from someone who your agency contracts with doesn't violate local or state law. That's permitted as long as the gift, if it's given to the city, is properly reported, and there are a number of different reporting requirements. So I'm not actually sure whether the using solicit in this regulation is necessary, because I'm not sure it makes a difference, because the violation of the restricted source rule in this situation occurs when the employee wins the prize in the raffle and receives the gift. There actually isn't technically a violation of the restricted source rule when you go to someone who contracts with your agency and ask, you know, Virgin Airlines, will you donate to the combined charities?
So, but based on the commentary we just got, then we could say, or tell me if we could, that items of any value received by a city employer officer as a result of a random drawing associated with participation in the city's annual joint fundraising drive under administrative code, etc. And that would be that works, right?
I think you want to put the random drawing in the second clause, not the first. Because I think the first...
I think what Commissioner Harriman is suggesting is that there wouldn't be that first clause.
Yeah, right. I'm saying delete the solicited. Okay. We don't, according to Mr. Gibner, we don't need it anyway.
Okay.
And we don't want to emphasize right. It here. So then it's just if what you received is the result of a random drawing. And that meets your concern as well, Commissioner Ward?
Yep.
And do you think that would, I do understand the concern of trying to make sure we don't get in the way of people being able to raise money for charity. Do you think that sufficiently resolves that issue?
Can we have a...
Okay. All right. So with that wording change, can I get a motion? Decision point number two.
Second.
Okay. And we have public comment on either decision point number one or decision point number two. Is there any public comment? All right, there's no public comment, so there's been a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, we're now moving into item number four on the agenda, which is a closed session. So we need a motion to move into closed session.
Move that we move our meeting into closed session.
Public comment? Okay, all those in favor.
Aye.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, me too. Okay, and then we'll need a motion once we're back on. we are back in open session, and I'll move that we find that it's in the best interest of the public not to disclose our closed session deliberations.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And just for the record, there are no public here. Moving to the minutes of the commissioners' regular meeting of March 8, 2010, were there any changes, additions, comments on the minutes? Okay, so can we have a motion?
I move that we approve the minutes as offered.
Okay, there's no public here, so no public comment. So there's been a motion made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so the minutes have been approved. Moving now to item number seven on the agenda, the executive director's report.
I'm just going to talk about one thing real quick and then take any questions. Budget, obviously, is just a continuing concern for us. Some end-of-year cuts have been handed down. They've asked us to cut 11,500 more from this year's budget. There's two cuts. There's rank and file and management. We escaped the rank and file, but they want us to cut 11,000 for management. Not entirely sure how we're going to do that, but they let us say we'll do it through attrition savings.
How many people constitute management?
They're defining it broadly, so anybody who has supervisory abilities in their job description, which is about 9 people.
Okay.
For next year, no cell phones. We don't have them to begin with. We never did. No cars. We don't have them. No travel. Travel's been eliminated, but our travel budget is gone. They're cutting our supplies budget another 10%, which is about a third of what it was 3 years ago. Things like that, but there's just all kinds of culling them that won't really have an impact on us.
So there's that annual conference you always used to go to.
We haven't gone in 2 years.
Because of budget
right.
issues. And no one can donate money to allow you to go because that's
yeah.
a gift.
I think that's forevermore. Kind of like, in fact, I don't think they're going to give us the money to even join Goldman next year. We might not even be a member of it. So it's a resource we lose. That's a wait and see. I'm most concerned about is staffing levels. And we have two vacancies right now. One is a front desk person. We just got the green light to go ahead and fill. Although there's another round of layoffs coming. So if we hire someone now, they'll be highly vulnerable to bumping. So we may just wait until somebody actually bumps in. You know, save someone else the aggravation being hired and then let go of a very short period of time. And then we have the open investigator position. I am sort of hoping that gets filled next year. But if they, you know, ask us to make some sort of sacrifice, it would be the funding for that position. Although I would ask them to let us to keep the position so that we could refill it at some point. But that would be the first target because there's not a live person at that desk. You know, and I'm trying to be as optimistic as possible about the rest. So that's where we're at there.
Any questions, comments, anything for Mrs. Sunker? Okay, so let's move on to item number 8 on the agenda, items for future meetings. Could you make a note for Jamie, please,
yeah.
Jack, of what we already talked about on the gift restrictions? And anything else? No. Okay. Public comment, moving to number 9, public comment on matters appearing and not appearing on the agenda. There's no public, so there's no comment. So I move that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.